These are all of our stories. These are who we are as Americans.
Freedom leads to prosperity. Freedom is the victor.
This is the podcast of Grassroots Radio Colorado with your host, Chris Cook.
And welcome. I am Chris Cook, and you're listening to the Grassroots Radio Colorado podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. No one is safe. No one is safe from the PC thought police. This has been so fascinating, especially considering the podcast that I did last night, to watch the news evolve over the course of the day about your favorite lefty and mine, Matt Damon, of all people. Matt Damon. Can you believe this? I mean, have you been watching what's going on? If you're not aware of what happened, here's what happened. He was being interviewed by The Guardian, and the subject of homosexuality came up in The Guardian's, in the interview with Ms. Day. And among other things that Daily Beast took a huge offense to, he made this statement. "I think it must be really hard for actors to be out publicly. But in terms of actors, I think you're a better actor the less people know about you, period. And sexuality is a huge part of that. Whether you're straight or gay, people shouldn't know anything about your sexuality because that's one of the mysteries that you should be able to play." And for that, he has been strung up on a cross in the town square to be laughed at and have tomatoes thrown at him by the progressive left. The progressive left, of which he is a member, okay? I mean, he is by no means whatsoever. He is far left. He criticizes Obama for being too far right. That's how far left Matt Damon is. But it does not immunize him from the PC thought police from coming down on his head for making that statement, which honestly, I don't find that offensive. It's a piece of acting advice. It is. The Daily Beast, I'm not sure who wrote this article. I really don't care. The Daily Beast had a problem with that statement, with Damon making that statement, because he is a heterosexual and he talks publicly about being married. And so since he's out of the closet as a heterosexual, he cannot say it must be hard to be gay and out in Hollywood. Instead, apparently what he was supposed to do with that, they even go that far as to tell him what he should have done, is he should then have started the conversation about how Hollywood can be more inclusive of gays and help them to play, get this, straight roles. Okay? Is anybody scratching their heads on this? Would it not be some form of microaggression to make a gay actor play a straight role? Well, I guess make is probably a bad term because they'll get paid millions of dollars to do so. I'm certain it has happened, but really, this is the problem. This is the problem. Damon references Rupert Everett, who played Julia Roberts' gay best friend in My Best Friend's Wedding, and that he hasn't had, you know, Damon-like success in Hollywood because he is openly gay. And so that's what Matt Damon, or that's what Daily Beast is criticizing him for, actually bringing him up. And the reason why that came up is because there were rumors early in Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's careers, when they co-wrote Good Will Hunting, that they were, in fact, a couple. And here's what he said to that. "It's just like any piece of gossip, and it puts us in a weird position of having to answer, you know what I mean? Which was then really deeply offensive." And this was like, what, 1994 or so? "I don't want to like imply it's some sort of disease. Then it's like I'm throwing my friends under the bus." I mean, is he not doing what the right thing is to do when you're discussing this subject, being honest. What a concept. Being freaking honest. No, that's absolutely not allowed. If you are not, you know, parroting whatever it is that the left wants you to parrot, if you are not heralding the talking points, then you're under the bus, man. And they threw Matt Damon under the freaking bus. Because he's straight. Is that not acceptable? Is it not acceptable to be a straight white male and a Democrat? Apparently not. I guess if you're a straight white male, you have to be a Republican. And then we're going to throw tomatoes at you anyway, but then you have an excuse for saying all these horrible things and eating puppies for breakfast and having horns growing out of your head. So, you know, I mean, if you're a Republican, then it's okay. If you're a Democrat and you say these things, shame on you. Oh my goodness. I thought we were bad about keeping our folks accountable. My God, this is just, it's just so much fun to watch. The thing that really caught my eye about this Daily Beast article, though, the title of the article is Shut Up, Matt Damon. Shut up, Matt Damon. They tell him to stop talking. He's having an honest conversation with a reporter, but because he did not say the right things, they want him to shut up. Can you think of any more obvious example of the PC Thought Police coming to throw him in PC Thought jail? Shut up, Matt Damon. Not that I haven't wanted to say that myself a whole lot, but it's because he says things that are so stupid in terms of global warming and fracking and that kind of thing. I mean, they're so off the mark. What he said there is absolutely true. It's absolutely true. You do retain more of a mystique if people don't know anything about you. Think of some of the best Oscar-nominated films you've ever seen, or indie films, if you watch indie or art house films. And I do enjoy those from time to time. And the part that I really do enjoy is that a lot of times they don't have named actors in them. So the actors, for me, are the roles that they're playing. The less I know about the actor, the better, because then that suspension of disbelief thing really happens. It really happens because you have no idea who these people are. They are the people on the screen. That's it. That's all they are to you. And so there is something to retaining that mystique. There is something to having that not known factor in being an actor and being able to portray these roles. I thought it was a good piece of advice, but no, apparently not. You have to put him up on a crucifix in the town square because he dared to speak the truth about acting. It's really kind of frightening, isn't it? And this is how it's enforced. It's all it is PC groupthink. This is how they manipulate the narrative. They manipulate the language. That is how they do it. And by when you control the language, when you control the words that are used, you control how people think. You control what is acceptable and what is not. You get rid of value-laden terms. You remove the values. If you stop condemning something that is wrong, then it is no longer wrong in people's minds. Think about that. And that's what the left has been on a quest to do forever. Ever since the failed proletariat revolution in Russia. You know, I mean, this is the quest that they have been on ever since they didn't win there in a violent revolution. And, you know, gosh darn it, these proletarians, they just keep joining the middle class. How dare they? You know, instead they had to go on a quest. One article I read today referred to it as the Long March, which I thought was great, through academia and entertainment. And they've gone on this quest to change the language, to change how people think in the United States and in the West. And that is the problem. That is exactly the problem that we have to strike back at. That thought right there. Ben Carson has been absolutely stellar about reacting and acting out against PC thought. So has Carly Fiorina, and so, of course, has Donald Trump. It's one of the reasons, probably the primary reason, why they are so far ahead in the polls. People are sick of being told how to think. People are sick of it. They already think these things. They're just actually hearing it out of somebody else's mouth. Thank God. That's the thought that goes through your head. You hear somebody say it, it's like, yes! Oh, man, I've been wishing somebody would say XYZ for so long. I've been wishing that somebody would say, yes, Mexico is actually dumping criminals and rapists on our shores because they don't want them anymore. That's what they're doing. You know, to actually speak the truth, hear somebody speak the truth like that, it's a relief. And that's why they're so far ahead in the polls. And that's why we hate Jeb Bush so much, because he says things that are so carefully scripted and so carefully meant to not offend that he just kind of fades. He's like a hologram, or like it's like he's in the fifth dimension or something, and he just, if he turns sideways, you really don't see him because he's just not there. There's no Jeb Bush there. You know, he's just not. Trump, Fiorina, Carson, they're all really, really real. Cruz is really, for me, he's really, really real. He's quieter than the other three. And he is a little bit more of a politician. He is a politician. He's a senator. But he's real, you know, and that's what people are reacting to, that authenticity, that willingness to get around the PC police and just say what in the heck is on everyone's mind. What a relief. What an awesome thing that is. The hypocrisy that blows me away about the left is that they scream that they want this open, honest, authentic conversation. But any transgression against the carefully scripted, microaggression-free, peon-to-victim culture that the progressive left pushes will be punished. They say that they want an open, honest, authentic conversation about race and class and sexuality. But what they're really asking for is a sharing circle where each speaker repeats the talking point of the day as it's been handed down by the Ministry of Truth. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for someone else to parrot their line. Not to say what's on everyone else's mind. They're looking to hear parrots of what is their line so that they can control the narrative, so that they can control how people think. That is what their goal is. And any transgression from that, and it doesn't matter who you are. Damon was on Ellen DeGeneres' show today explaining what he meant. He didn't offer an apology. And here's what The Guardian had to say about that. It's baffling and disheartening to see DeGeneres, a public figure who's openly gay, rally to Damon's defense. Think about that for a second. Even being gay can't protect you from being accused of gay bashing. Being gay can't protect you from that. If that isn't a sign of victimhood culture, I don't know what is. We're going to label everything as offensive. Found a really fascinating study about that today, and I want to share that with you. I'm going to break a little bit early. We'll talk about that when we come back. That's a tune from Jim Rooster called Mind Your Manners. Thought that was appropriate. Freemusicarchive.org. Go check them out. We're talking about hashtag Mattsplaining. Matt, M-A-T-T, splaining. Yes, he has his own hashtag now. And this is the overreaction of the left on this thing is just absolutely stunning to me. It truly is. If Matt Damon can be criticized for making such an innocuous statement, how are the rest of us going to fare in the mainstream media? Honestly. And this is the problem. This is exactly the problem. They say that they want this honest, open, authentic conversation, but they want to shut down any dissension. That is exactly what they're trying to do. They want to shut down any dissension and then call it an honest, open, authentic conversation so that they don't have to actually face any arguments that might tear down their own. So they don't have to face any dissension. They don't have to actually think. All they have to do is parrot the talking points, put out the hashtag, and rail in the blogosphere about how somebody said something that was a microaggression. And oh my gosh, you know, it's the oppressors coming to us, and we're all victims, and so come to our aid, come to our side, because you know we need your help. The article I want to talk to you about, it's just absolutely fascinating about how this all has come together. There is an article. Well, it was a study by two sociologists, Bradley Campbell and Jason Manning, talking about why microaggressions, and this is a term that didn't even exist about 6 months ago, talking about why microaggressions have erupted on many American college campuses in just the past few years, and why folks are having such a problem with this and what gave rise to it. This paper is absolutely fascinating. I'm reading a summary of it from Jonathan Haidt at righteousmind.com. And I've got a few things from him. He's actually a really good writer. This is great. Where microaggressions really come from, a sociological account. And there's some big pieces to this. This all has its base in how we deal with conflict. And this has changed over time. And that's what the writers of the paper point out. It used to be in the 18th and 19th centuries, we had what they called an honor culture, which means that you take offense personally, but then you deal with the offense personally. And it has a high, you know, I mean, if you're insulted, and you challenge somebody to a duel and boom, it's over, don 20 paces. That is how we used to handle it. And then with the rise of law, and the rise of, I guess, Victorian society, which is causative, I don't know, but the rise of sort of a Victorian sensibility, there was a change from an honor culture to a dignity culture, and that held sway in the 19th and 20th centuries. And so under a dignity culture, you would, you know, if something needed to be addressed at law, then you would do so. And if it was something that was minor, it wasn't addressable at law, then you would either privately talk to the person and deal with the conflict, or you'd keep your mouth shut. And that was a dignity culture. And it was a belief. It was a transition from a belief that everybody had honor that they had to defend to everybody has dignity. It's a change in the premise that held sway in our culture. It's a change in how we viewed humanity. Either you had to defend your humanity, as we did earlier, or you had humanity, and that was the base assumption. I don't know if I'm making that clear. I'm not quite sure that I'm quite clear with it myself. In the 21st century, we're beginning to see a hybrid of that, and it has to do with a rise in change in our society and how atomized we've become. We've become very granulated. We've become very isolated, really. And a lot of that, I look at social media and I wonder how much of it is due to that. You don't have personal relationships. You feel like you have personal relationships, but what you really have is a public relationship with a whole bunch of people. And you're living that life out loud, unless you're private messaging back and forth, and that's all you're doing. You're not having private conversations. You're having public conversations with a few people on social media. I wonder if that's part of this. And it's the decay of the family, which we talked about a little bit last night, the decay, the nationalization of the family, where the government is responsible for all things. You don't need to have a family, basically, around you, because the government becomes responsible for all things. Higher authority becomes responsible for all things. And so there's this atomization, the individualization. We're pulling in on ourselves. in large part because of technology, in part because of the mobility of society, in part because of sociological factors that have to do with both our political culture and just our social changes, just the way the society is moving. And then along with that, you have an appeal to others, to third parties, as you did in the dignity culture. With both of those things, I'm not getting all this right. Let me pull out my notes and make sure that I'm, because I did make some notes about this. Cultures that lack intimacy and cultural homogeneity. I'm butchering that word. Intimacy and cultural homogeneity. In other words, cultures that lack assimilated families. That would describe America, wouldn't it? But that, then you juxtapose that piece to having organized authority and public opinion remaining as powerful sanctions. So let me unpack that, because there was a lot to that. We have increasingly isolated people who see organized authority and public opinion as their main forms of social control and their ability to answer offense. So what we're seeing at its base between those factors, what we're seeing now is a combination of the willingness to take offense at the slightest thing that we had in the honor culture, and then the appeal to third parties, to organized authority like law or public opinion that we had in dignity culture. And you put those two things together, and you have what the authors are calling a victim culture, which we've been talking about for, you know, a year at least, probably much longer, but at least I've been talking about it for a year. That's what we've got now. We've got victim culture. The problem with victim culture is that there is no end to the conflict. Everyone continues to take offense. And they continue to appeal to public opinion. They continue to appeal to outside authorities for that offense. That is a recipe for disaster. The thing that that Haidt says in this article that I thought was just perfect, says the key idea to this entire paper is that this new moral culture of victimhood fosters a moral dependence. We're depending on others for our morality, and an atrophying of the ability to handle small interpersonal matters on one's own. So we're unable to deal with being offended. We're unable to deal with somebody saying something that maybe crosses a boundary, because we're not quite sure where our boundaries are. So we draw them really, really, really big. And anytime you say something like, if you are not Latino and you say a Latino word, how dare you use my language? How dare you bastardize my language in your mouth? You know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's a really, really, really largely drawn boundary. That's really stupid. But that is exactly what people are taking offense at. How dare you say that it increases the mystique of an actor to not let his sexuality become public fodder for the gossip mills? What a concept. But that's a microaggression against gay culture. That's a microaggression. That's the problem. And we continue this conflict. We continue to escalate. You know, the gay actors are offended at what Matt Damon said. Matt Damon's offended at the gay actors and says something back. And Ellen DeGeneres pipes in. And so now she's a gay basher too, even though she's been openly gay since 1997. And so, you know, we're going to bash Ellen DeGeneres and Matt Damon. And then, gosh, there's this podcast lady from Colorado. And how dare she call this stuff out? The left is so good at using language to weave the emperor's new clothes that they are absolutely willing to rip those off and do it again and again and again in ever, ever smaller increments. That is what they're doing. They are absolutely terrifying the populace from speaking. You can't talk without offending offending somebody at some point in time. That, to me, is the terrifying part. How are we ever going to solve anything in this country if we can't talk about it? How are we ever going to actually heal racial divides in the United States if we can't talk about it? How are we going to restore morality as a foundation that isn't handed to us from our government if we can't talk about it? If we bow down to the PC police, if we bow down to the people who have such thin skins, it's amazing you don't see their muscles moving and their hearts beating. If we cave to these people over and over and over again and don't have these conversations, how are we ever going to get anything solved? This isn't a new concept. It really isn't. Confucius talked about this, okay? He lived in the 6th century. Confucius talked about this. This was one of his core doctrines. It's called the rectification of names. If names be not correct, language is not in accordance with the truth of things. Duh. If you can't name things, how can you talk about them? If language be not in accordance with the truth of things, affairs cannot be carried on successfully. Bingo! Confucius had it right 1500 years ago. That's the thing that's so terrifying. We've known about this all along, and yet we still allowed it to happen. We still watched it. We still bought into it. We said, well, we don't want to offend anybody. We wouldn't want to speak the truth and offend anybody. Give me a break. They talked about this in the Bible. You know, this is not a new concept, but we don't seem to have the balls to stand up and say the truth. Why is that? And it's because they've beaten us down over and over and over and over again. And nobody wants to feel like they're a bad person. Nobody wants to feel like they're offending people. Nobody wants to feel like, you know, they deserve to be vilified. Well, we need to be willing and courageous enough to take that on. The truth is more important. The truth is much more important. It doesn't mean you have to go out and gratuitously offend people all the time. But speaking the truth, if it offends people, then that's their problem. That's not yours. They're on the wrong side of whatever that truth is. That's why they're offended. It should be okay to speak the truth. Always. Always. This is the problem. And that this is how we fight back. And we call things for what they are. They're not Nazis, they're National Socialists. Or Germans, depending on the context the word is used. You could be white, but you can be white from a whole lot of places. If you are European American, then you're European American. Don't let them take that heritage away from you. Don't let them denigrate that heritage. European American is just as valid as African American or Mexican American or any other kind of American. I would prefer to just be an American. Wouldn't that be nice? What about affirmative action? Talked about this briefly last night. Affirmative action is racial discrimination. It's hiring based on skin color. It's racial discrimination. Let's call it for what it is. Oh, it's one of my favorites, hate crime. There's no such thing as a hate crime. Crimes are crimes are crimes. And if they should be punished severely, they should be punished severely no matter what. The thought that was in the person's head should have zero bearing. If they took action on that thought and violated another person's rights, that's the crime, not the thinking. This is just, it continues, you know, it just continues. They try to vanillify the jihadis, call them militants, they're rebels, you know, whatever. That's not true. They're terrorists. They want to create terror. ISIS is not some militant group. They're not just radical Islam. They're terrorists. They're savages. Call them that. Call them that. That's exactly what they are. and you're not Islamophobic. You understand the history. You're not homophobic. You're simply willing to call out the differences. You're not a misogynist. You understand the difference between the sexes. You know, let's get this. And I'm assuming, now there are bigots out there. There are sexists out there. There are misogynists. I get that. I've seen it. I've been victim of it, I suppose, at some point in time. You're not going to hear me complain about it. I don't know why I would want to ever work for or go out with somebody who doesn't like women. But, you know, it's true that there are folks out there who just simply make those judgments. But there are also people who are tainted with that brush because of political correctness that have no business being tainted with that brush because they are actually speaking the truth. So when Matt Damon sat down with The Guardian and said, "It must be hard to be an actor out in Hollywood. You can retain your mystique as an actor if you don't talk about your sexuality, and that allows you to play any role without any question." He was speaking the truth. They had him hung and quartered in the town square because of it. As much as I'm loath because of his other political views to support Matt Damon in this, I am 100% behind him. I hope you are too. Thanks so much for joining me this evening. Come find me on Facebook, facebook.com/grassrootsradiocolorado. Or you can always email me, Chris, K-R-I-S, at grassrootsradiocolorado.com. And remember, America is great because Americans are great. So go out there and be exceptional.